Move on to item five, Ram Island Rod and Gunning Club. Mr. Watkinson.
Okay, the case before you today regards the Ram Island Rod and Gunning Club Incorporated. It's application number 121665. And this is actually an application for after-the-fact authorization for improvements to the house structure constructed on pilings in Back Bay in the Pungo area of Virginia Beach. And that includes 625 square foot second story with stairs, surrounding decking and piers, which measure 8 feet wide on the northern and eastern sides, 15 feet wide on the southern side, 10 feet wide with two accompanying 10-foot wide by 24-foot long finger piers on the western side, as well as an 8-foot by 14-foot floating dock. In this case, electric power is provided by an overhead line on poles that extends from the structure approximately 370 feet to a service pole at the upland near the end of Ship's Cabin Road. What I want to do today is basically go through some slides that show you the location, show you what's in the application drawings that were submitted, show some slides depicting the structure's existence over time, briefly go over two protest letters that we have received that are in your packet, and give you staff's recommendation. Also, at the end of that, I will introduce some correspondence that was submitted by the applicant through their attorney and Bridge Trust Title, restating their case regarding the ownership of the submerged lands in this area of Back Bay based on their analysis of the chain of title. And also recent correspondence that was placed in your packet today from the Attorney General's office confirming their opinion that the submerged lands at the site are state-owned submerged lands. So with that, if that sounds appropriate to the commission, I will continue with that course of action. The house structure is located where you see the star. This is a topographic map showing this area of Virginia Beach. You have the Atlantic Ocean off to your right. The National Wildlife Refuge boundaries are depicted here just to give you a sense of where the structure is, and it's in this area here, and another area known as Redhead Bay of Back Bay. This is an aerial photograph from 2009 from our VGen series. This is the structure here. We were notified of this, as you know, back in late 2011. We went out and took a look at the structure based on the complaints we had received that there was construction going on at the structure in Back Bay. And this was a photo that was taken at that period. You see November 17, 2011. At the time, this was the main item that was under construction. There were some decks around the facility that we think had been built since the commission had jurisdiction over the structures. A little bit closer shot. This is looking from the corner of the building offshore, and you see the power line that goes across Back Bay to the end of Ship's Cabin Road. Should note that when the commission considered this issue as a notice to comply back in May of 2012, you set aside any enforcement action, basically saying that the applicant could go forward and research the title information. But you did ask that that line be raised for safety reasons. That was done. I should mention with regard to the line that the Corps of Engineers in commenting on this application have requested that that line be raised to 20 feet in elevation, consistent with any other Coast Guard requirements that might be, and consistent with any other Coast Guard requirements that might be necessary. I do not know the exact height that it was raised to, but they did show pictures showing it raised quite a bit, and it looked like it was in much safer condition after the commission meeting in May. But I also wanted to show you later on, prior to our notice to comply going out to the rigs at the time, that we went back out to inspect the facility to try to get some dimensions and took a couple photos, and you see the nature of the facility then in February of 2012. I think they added to the roof, and the shrink wrap is around the building. You'll notice, and I think it's important, and it has a bearing on some of our recommendations, that the when you have a higher than normal water level in Back Bay, and Back Bay is mostly affected by wind tides, there is a very small lunar tide in Back Bay, and so depending on the direction of the wind and the nature of the wind for a period of time, you get rises and fall in the water level. But as you can see, portions of the deck appear to be submerged during this tidal event or this water level event. Different orientation of the structure. You see the decks around the facility, stairway going up to the newly constructed second floor, and this is one of the piers. The other pier is just off here to the right-hand side, and this is the floating pier. That's part of the application. These are the application drawings submitted by the applicant. This is the vicinity map showing, again, the Ram Island Club here near Ship's Cabin Club. Near the end of Ship's Cabin, and this is at near the end of Ship's Cabin Road. This was the plan view of the facility that was submitted by the applicant. This area in here is the second story, and then you have the decks, features around the main building that previously existed, and then you have the two finger piers and the floating dock depicted here. The applicant didn't parse out or separate out or describe the various components that were requested for after the fact, but as we've mentioned or described in our Habitat Management Division evaluation, we believe it to be the decks that surround the main portion of the house that was previously there, the second floor, the piers, and the floating dock. This was a plan view drawing, or I should say a section view drawing that was submitted by the applicant. We had asked for a clearer version of this. When we first got it, it was very dark. It was hard to see the writing, and it appears to be cut off on the edge. The applicant resubmitted this. It was lighter, but it's still cut off and doesn't necessarily show all of the stair feature out on the edge. What I want to do now is just go through a series of aerial photographs we obtained by contacting the city and looking through some of their archival information. And what we think it's important here is it just shows that there was a structure in Back Bay, so it does enjoy some right to be there, we believe, historic right, dependent based on the circumstances. And I just want to document that. And, of course, it's just the additions that have been added since the commission's had jurisdiction, and we think since 1990, at least, that require authorization from the commission. This is the structure in the 1937 aerial. Again, this is the Ship's Cabin road area here. This is the 1949 aerial. Again, you see the structure. 1958 aerial. Again, you see the structure. Again, documented. It's been there for quite some time. This is the 1990 aerial, and we think this is a pretty important one of the photos in the series. You see a fairly square feature that was the house structure. And then you go to 2002, and you see some decking around it and the piers. So it appears from sometime between 1990 and 2002 is when we saw some of the additions and the piers added to the structure. Again, this is a 2007 photo. Again, you have the surrounding decking. It looks like possibly the flat observation platform was built on the roof sometime in that period. And then we have a 2009 Virginia Beach pictometry photo taken in December 24, 2009, showing the second floor. Looks like it's under construction in that photo. And this is a photo that was appeared in a for rent by owner advertisement for the facility, showing it in what looks like better condition than it is now. The decking, I think it's pretty much the same as it is now. It did have the platform on top before the and before the second story was constructed.
What was the date on that one, Tony?
I do not know the date of this photo. We think it was sometime in 2007 or so time frame, but we're not positive about that. I should note that we have received two protests to this project. They are from local residents in the area. They indicate that the owner's new permits were required and that the addition should not be approved. They question the safety of the structure and the electrical systems, the need for adequate sanitary facilities, as well as question who would be responsible if there was a fire or if the building or pier collapsed. One of the letters does cite cases involving non-water-dependent structures that have been considered by the commission in other situations or for other cases. In this case, we feel that one of the important aspects of this project to consider is the water dependency of the structure. Obviously, a house in Back Bay is not a water-dependent feature. It doesn't have to be over the water to be there to operate. In fact, our subaqueous guidelines define what is water-dependent. And I think it's important that I read those. As defined in the Commission's subaqueous guidelines, water dependency means those structures and activities that must be located in, on, or over state-owned submerged lands. When applying this definition, both of the following questions must be answered affirmatively. Is it necessary that the structure be located over the water? And is it necessary that the activity associated with the structure be over the water? Should note that the guidelines do go on to say that use of the definition for water dependency does not necessarily preclude issuance of a permit for non-water dependent structure over state-owned submerged lands. At public hearing, the commission may determine that while a structure is not water dependent, it is a reasonable use of state-owned submerged lands. These types of projects are evaluated on a case-by-case basis. With that said, I think it's important in terms of our recommendation at the staff level to note that when we look at after-the-fact applications, we believe it's appropriate to consider if the structures needing a permit would likely have been authorized had an application been submitted before construction. In this case, the second story and stairs represent a clear non-water dependent use. As such, it is not necessary that it be over state-owned submerged lands. The second story structure only leads to additional private use of public resources with the potential for additional impacts to state waters from additional human use and discharges and from potential debris entering the waterway should the structure fall into a state of disrepair or be damaged in a storm. As for the decks and piers, we do believe they provide access to an existing structure, and as I noted, we feel has an historic right to be in Back Bay given the unique circumstances of its existence. In this case, we think that, of course, it existed back in the early 1900s, that there was probably likely a marsh island there that seems to be documented in some of the records that exist. And that marsh island eroded away over time, and you're left with the open pile structure that exists today. Therefore, the piers and the surrounding deck, in this case, do seem, however, to be a reasonable use of state submerged lands. While two piers do seem like more than is necessary, they appear configured to provide a boat slip at the structure. Likewise, the floating dock appears to provide potential jet ski mooring. But given that the structure is some 370 feet from land, the electrical line is necessary if power is to be provided to the structure. So as such, in consideration of the foregoing and the factors contained in Section 28.2.1205A of the Code of Virginia, staff recommends approval of the additional decking and piers around the house structure, the floating dock, and the power line. Staff does not, however, support approval of the second-story living area. It is an unnecessary feature from a water-dependent perspective. Although we are not aware of any engineering studies It appears from the existing condition of the pile-supported structure that the weight associated with the second-story addition may also be contributing to its stability or instability based on the apparent settling of some of the support pilings. We further believe that any permit that may be authorized by the Commission to retain features should also stipulate that authorization is included to replace those features that are in a state of disrepair, and that the height of the power line complies with the Coast Guard requirements, that the structure must comply with all city building code requirements, and that the owner must comply with all sanitary facility requirements of either the Department of Environmental Quality or the Department of Health. Depending on the Commission's decision, we revised drawings will be needed for permit issuance to reflect the Commission's authorization. Lastly, since this is an after-the-fact case, civil charges should be considered if the second story is allowed to be retained. Based on the civil charge matrix adopted by the Commission, the civil charge should be based on significant deviation or noncompliance and a moderate degree of impact. In this case, we would not recommend civil charges for the decks and piers if the second story is required to be removed, since they likely were in place in some form before the structure was acquired by the current owner. That pretty much sums up where we think we are at this point. In your packet, I would call your attention to the end of the packet information that you have. In there, you have a letter from Bridge Title Trust dated July 13, 2012, and attachments which document some of their findings regarding the title title information that was provided. And you also have in your packet under items 7 and 8 recent letters from Bridge Title Trust dated November 30, 2012, and attachments that are available documenting the ownership, what they feel is the ownership interests in this case of the submerged lands in Back Bay, and a similar letter from Mr. John Daniel II dated December 4, 2012. And lastly, in your packet, you're going to find an item L, which was a memorandum from the Attorney General's office prior to the September Commission meeting, where the AG's office felt that the submerged lands at the site rested with the state and therefore the Commission had jurisdiction. And lastly, item M in your packet, which was inserted this morning, we received another memo from the Attorney General's office where they have restated basically their belief that the submerged lands at the site is the property of the Commonwealth. With that, I'll try and answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions, Tony? Mr. Taggart?
You mentioned in your testimony that some of the pilings seem to be submersing into the bottom. How do you determine that, and is it readily
observation at the site? I personally have not been there. A couple members of my staff have been, if you want to hear from them. But if you look at the photos, you see the water level, you see some of the decking out of the water, some of the decking appears to be submerged, and as a result, it appears there's been some settling of the structure.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Yes, sir. Mr. Beck?
What was staff's recommendation why to remove the second story?
From a non-water-dependent feature, it's not necessary to have a house over the water. Therefore, it's not water-dependent. And as a result, we think it just adds to the private use of a public resource by having the second floor there, potentially adds to further discharges associated with use of that second floor, and also leads to potential increases in debris in the waterway should the structure be lost due to a storm event or something like that.
Can you go back, Tony, to the 1990 aerial and flip it to the 2002? I didn't. The distance was so far from that 1990 area. I wasn't sure if that photograph was really showing what you were, the point you were trying to make.
And this is 1990.
And that's the structure.
That's the structure in question. And then if you go forward one, you're up to 2002, and you see the roof, the outline of the roof of the building, basically in this area here, and you have some decking around it, and you have the pier. the observation platform does not look like it existed in 2002, nor the second story.
Any other questions? All right, let's hear from the applicant. Thank you, Tony. Mr. Daniel, good morning.
Good morning. For your record, my name is John Daniel, and I'm here on this on behalf of the Riggs family again. The Riggs are present again. They are still retired, but if we keep going, they may very soon have to go back to work. Also with me is Mr. Klein, my real estate partner from our Virginia Beach office. Let me welcome first Mr. Beck and Ms. Haney to the commission. It's a wonderful place to live, work, and play, as they say. It's also very time-consuming, and I want to apologize that our first acquaintance had to be through 3 inches of material, but I promise that's not habit, and it only really happens when it's essential and an important component of the matter that you all are dealing with at the present time. With your permission, Mr. Commissioner, I want to go back a little bit in history before we get to any kind of comments with respect to the immediate staff report and the after-the-fact permit. So, especially for those that are new, and to refresh a bit for those that have been here for a while, the issue at hand began in October 2011 with correspondence from the commission to the Riggs. There was some subsequent correspondence to that. And in February of that year, there was additional correspondence which addressed the issue of ownership and title to the property in some detail. And on March 7th of 2012, the commission issued a notice to comply letter to the Riggs with regard to the alleged unauthorized construction which had taken place on the property. During that period of time, the Riggs family had been conversing, perhaps as best they could, with commission staff, continuing to assert that they had title to this property by virtue of certain crown grants and grants from governors of the Commonwealth, two to be precise. That seemed to be falling on deaf ears, and in April, the Riggs came to me and asked if we might be able to try to help them through this quagmire that they were most frustrated about, and which involved a matter of extreme principle with them, that being ownership and title to the property in question. So in late April, April 30th to be precise, couple of days after being consulted by the Riggs, I met with Mr. Watkinson and some of his staff with respect to the notice to comply letter, and we talked for a reasonably long amount of time about the issue of ownership and title to the property. And I provided at that time some limited information on that, which is what we were able to pull together in a couple of days, which were grants from the governor of this Commonwealth to predecessors in the direct chain of title to the Riggs. I think that conversation, as it turns out, was productive. It began to define the issues, and I think it is a fair characterization to say that most of the conversation revolved around conversation regarding ownership and title to the property. On May 2nd, 2012, I wrote to Mr. Watkinson indicating that title issues were difficult and that ancient title issues presented especially difficult issues and were time-consuming in order to do the chain of title work, which in most instances these days can be done by virtue of technology. In the case of ancient titles, that is very seldom the case. That work has to be done at archives and courthouses and predominantly at the state library as well, where ancient documents are maintained. I asked respectfully for 4 months in order to do that title work at that time. And subsequent to that, Mr. Watkinson suggested to me that 4 months seemed to be a bit long, and could we perhaps do it in a shorter amount of time? We then received notice on May 11th that the matter would be on the commission agenda for its May 22nd meeting, and we appeared at that May 22nd, 2012 meeting. We presented evidence regarding title, and we asked the commission for 2 months in order to do that title work, rather than the original four, which we thought was necessary. And we also pledged our best efforts to address the power line issue within the 21 days that the commission thought reasonable to do that, we ultimately did. On June the 12th, within that 21-day period, I provided to staff photographs of the improved power lines and navigation placards, which this commission asked to be placed on those poles, in explicit compliance with the admonition of the commission that they had concern about their role in navigation and the necessity to make certain that boaters would have an opportunity and could see those poles and not create a hazard. In concurrence with the commission recommendation and conversations with the staff, the Riggs family, back to the ancient title work now, hired a gentleman by the name of Mr. George Bird. You see Mr. Bird's work. It's what we provided to you in the last 10 days. In which we have certainly shared with Mr. Kugelman and his office as timely a way as we possibly could, given the complexities. I want to correct one thing that was mentioned during the Habitat report. Mr. Watkinson indicated that material, quote-unquote, restated what we had provided you before. That's really not accurate. A portion of it, perhaps a large portion of it, was restatement. However, a significant portion of it was addressing issues which you all had questions about when you received the first 11th-hour memorandum from the Office of the Attorney General on the eve of our last conversation. So what you have is not really what I would consider a restatement of what had been provided before, but it was additional work based upon the observations with respect to title which had been raised by the Office of the Attorney General. The Riggs family also hired Bridge Trust Title to provide an opinion on the ultimate work that Mr. Bird could perform. As you probably know, at least those from the Tidewater area, Bridge Trust Title is probably one of the premier title groups in Virginia. It was formerly known as Pioneer Title, and it is a subsidiary of BB&T. So they are a reputable premier title examining group, and I'm sure Mr. Plumlee is familiar with their work. The vice president of Bridge Trust, who oversaw the review and the review of the work, Pam Faber, is a graduate of the Wharton School, the College of William and Mary. Her legal practice for more than two decades has been devoted exclusively to Virginia real estate matters, and she has served as a real estate partner at some of the largest law firms in Virginia Beach and also as underwriting counsel for Stewart Title and Guarantee Company. She is a licensed title insurance underwriter, a certified instructor for the Virginia Insurance Continuing Education Board, and in short, between Mr. Bird and Ms. Faber, the Riggs have retained what we thought were the very best folks in order to undertake this enterprise, especially given the limited number of individuals who hold themselves out as experts in ancient title matters. On July 13th of 2012, myself and Mr. Klein and Pam Faber of Bridge Trust met with your counsel to provide the title work performed by Mr. Bird and the opinion of Bridge Trust. That opinion, signed by Bridge Trust, stated, quote, "We find the title is vested in Ram Island Rod and Gunning Club, Inc., end quote. Mr. Kugelman, at that meeting, received the material. He asked some questions about the work, but he also clearly indicated to us, and we understood, that he was not the voice of real estate matters at the Office of the Attorney General. He wanted to consult with his colleagues, and that obviously was appropriate, he being Marine Resource Commission expert, not a real estate. So what happens now, in my view, is really searched for a word here, but it's really truly bizarre, especially in light of the memorandum we received this past Saturday night from the Attorney General's office. In response to the title work of Mr. Byrd, the commission, this commission, hired its own ancient title expert to review the research that Mr. Byrd had done and the opinion letter of Bridge Trust. To my knowledge, there is no formal report from the state's new expert, a gentleman by the name of Mr. Basquier. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, but all I have been able to obtain is correspondence from Mr. Basquier to Mrs. Kugelman and Watkinson noting, quote, Mr. Byrd was an excellent title examiner and, parentheses, he, Mr. Basquier, doubts much could be gained by redoing his work, end quote, meaning the work that he had reviewed of George Byrd. That correspondence did go on to point out a suit in Chancery of some years back, which was not addressed in the work of Mr. Byrd, the formal product of Mr. Byrd, because the only question raised about the title work was that question about the Chancery suit. It was also repeated as a question in the first memorandum from the Office of the Attorney General. So we went back to Big Bridge Trust, and we asked Mr. Byrd once again to review that matter. On September 24th, 2012, Bridge Trust issued yet another letter stating that we were aware of that suit when we issued our opinion on July 13th, 2012. Nothing within the filings associated with that suit diminished the prior opinion that we provided the commission, end quote. I then made a subsequent appearance before the commission at the public comment agenda and the public consent comment agenda of a meeting and requested that this matter needed to move along in keeping with the admonition that we had received from staff that 4 months was too long. Nonetheless, we were now at 4 months, and we asked that the matter move along with some expedited review. The matter was then scheduled for a second hearing on the issue of commission jurisdiction to require permitting at the September 25th meeting of this commission. As you all know, late in the evening of September 24th, we received from the commission staff a memorandum from real estate attorneys in the Office of the Attorney General, Mr. Kugelman. Interestingly, I have two copies of that memorandum in my file. One is dated September 17th, and the official one, which we discussed and which was presented, was the one dated September 25th. I can't find that there's any difference between those and in that week's time, and certainly the one on the 17th wasn't marked a draft in any way, shape, or form. The question being, why the 11th hour? That memorandum, nonetheless, goes on to analyze title issues, goes on for 4 pages, referring specifically to certain deeds and the decision of the special commissioner raised by Mr. Basquier and documents claimed not to be included in the material assembled by George Byrd. The memorandum attempts to refute the title work of Mr. Byrd. However, because it was provided to us just hours before the hearing, notwithstanding the fact that we'd provided our title assessment more than 2 months earlier, we did have the opportunity to have Bridge Trust analyze the memo and provide yet a third opinion. At the commission meeting on September 25th, the commission on a vote of 3-2 determined to assert jurisdiction over the property and to request the submittal of an after-the-fact permit for the alleged construction improprieties at the Ram Island property. More importantly, perhaps, it was clear from both the commission and the staff that the issue of ownership and title, the issue we've now been talking about for 10 months, could be submitted or revisited at any time. On November 7th, I submitted on behalf of the Riggs family an after-the-fact JPA permit application in accordance with the direction of the commission. That application, frankly, was submitted as a total fallback position to the premier issue that we're here to have discussed, which is the ownership of the property in question. As those of you have heard this issue on all the previous times, the principal issue at stake for our client is one of ownership of the property in question. It has and remains an issue of principle. These people looked at this issue before they acquired this property, which was in 2005, so I don't sure what the purpose of the 2002 drawing is showing decking. And they put their retirement and other in this after what they thought was due diligence and what, after all the work and effort that's gone into it, appears to be absolutely correct due diligence with respect to the title. So we're here today once again to discuss the principal issue of ownership. In response to the September 17th or 25th memo of the AG's office, which is in not any way, shape, or form any official opinion of the Office of the Attorney General, although I suspect this agency is entitled to such an opinion should they seek one, we presented Mr. Bird's review of Mr. Basquiat's comments and the other comments made by the Office of the Attorney General. On December 4th, I provided the updated material deemed absent from the original report by the Office of the Attorney General and an update opinion letter from Bridge Trust. That material was provided earlier to the Office of the Attorney General for their review as well. I trust that you have had the opportunity to review those materials and specifically the letter from Bridge Trust title. It is difficult material and it's time consuming, obviously, to fully appreciate all of the several documents that are included. However, to simplify it, I think all of us understand that when you purchase real property, what you really look for before you're going to go any further with financing or anything else is, can you actually obtain title to that property? And for that representation and for that assurance and for that insurance with respect to you, the buyer, having title to that property, you look for a statement from a reputable title insurance company that they would insure that title. You will note, I hope, it was italicized in the letter from Bridge Trust, that Bridge Trust title has opined that they would in fact insure this title as the Ram Island Rod and Gunning Club. And consequently, I think, I hope, that makes some difference and certainly is exactly what any of us who were looking to acquire real property would look for with respect to having assurances with regard to title. On Saturday night, and I actually got it because I'm a pretty boring guy, I received a letter from another memo from Mr. Kugelman by email with his apologies for the lateness of the hour, but he and I had discussed that they would want to respond, and I knew we would see something at some point in time. So we get another memo from the Office of the Attorney General from the folks in the Real Estate Division reviewing the package of material which we had previously provided to Mr. Kugelman and to this commission. Aside from, quote, noting that, quote, Bridge Trust has conducted a thorough examination of the title and completed a very difficult title examination, quote, the memo is devoid of any comments with regard to title. In fact, the position now seems to be that the state of title to the former Ram Island is not a controlling factor in the present matter before the commission. I think that's what the last memo says. The title is not a controlling matter in front of this commission. Rather, the theory now seems to be, and I struggle with trying to understand this, the theory seems to be that since the property once sat on a landmass, and that landmass somehow is now eroded into the sea, the landmass somehow disappeared from existence and was never a bed or bay of the Commonwealth. But it had to have reappeared as bottom land, and other than the sunken island, and thus VMRC has jurisdiction, notwithstanding a king's grant or a governor's grant. It was here, went to here, end of story. I don't understand that legal theory. I don't claim to be the smartest person in the world, but we know that the island went somewhere. We know that we have all said that it's submerged. We've said that forever. The memo seems to make some great discovery that we somehow hung ourselves up because we, you know, suggest in the Bridgeport memo that the land is submerged. There's never been any question but that the land's submerged. The question is, where did it go? It had to become the bed. I mean, it just didn't disappear. I mean, David Copperfield didn't get involved in this. I mean, it had to have gone. It had to be the bay. So it is an issue of title. And if it's not an issue of title, if it really is not an issue of title, and it somehow is this illusory matter that this land went somewhere else and never was a bay, why is it that since April, the commission staff has been engaged in a robust discussion about titling? Why is it that they requested the Riggs family to spend significant dollars on Mr. Bird and on Bridge Trust in order to demonstrate title? And why has time and money been spent to review all the various title reports by the staff and by others? And this is really the granddaddy of them all. If title is not a controlling factor, if title is not the issue, why is it that your staff hired an ancient title expert examiner to examine the title? Why did we pay Mr. Basquiat to examine title if title is not the issue? It is a title issue. Title has been demonstrated to be the result of a direct chain of title from the Crown to the Ram Island Rod and Gun Club. I am going to stop here. I'm glad to have Mr. Klein answer specific questions if you have them with respect to the title work, and I'm certainly glad to answer those questions that I'm comfortable answering with respect to the matter in front of you. But we would certainly renew our request to this commission that based on the work that has been done, the thorough title examination, the effort that has been made to address the issues raised by the commission with respect to ownership and consequently whether or not there was jurisdiction or not within the commission to issue permits on this property, we would respectfully request that you find that there is no jurisdiction in the commission and allow the Riggs to move forward with the City of Virginia Beach, who will review their plans, specifications, and a host of other issues associated with this property to make sure that it is adequate and meets all the various code requirements of the City of Virginia Beach, the jurisdiction wherein the property lay. Thank you very much for your...
Mr. Daniel, at some point, are you going to speak to the after-the-fact permit, or...?
Hope not.
After-the-fact... Okay. So you're just going to wait and see what happens. All right?
I'm ready to.
Okay.
And I realize that was is the agenda item, but I don't know how else to sort of go about eating this thing unless we make the first decision.
Okay. Mr. Plumlee. Question?
Mr. Daniel, I'm just going to read two statements from the AG's letter, and I'd like you to address, it's the same issue, but I'd like you to address it if you could.
Okay.
It says at the bottom of the first full paragraph on page 2 of the letter, today, however, the upland landmass that comprised Ram Island is gone, the result of erosion, which is presumed in the absence of avulsion or some other sudden cause. Then if you look at the last long paragraph of the same page, it says the changed physical conditions in the field and the evidence of many years of erosion are sufficient to support a finding that VMRC has jurisdiction over and title to the now submerged lands or bottom lands under the site of the former Ram Island, which is, I think, the point that's being drawn by the AG. That was previously brought in the other memo as well. It wasn't put quite as forcefully as it was in this memo. Can you address that specifically?
Let me just add one other sentence that's in the, that's along the same lines, that's in the September 25th on the last page, September 25th letter from the AG's office. It has, and it says this, it has not overcome the presumption that Ram Island was submerged under the water by the slow and gradual process of erosion that resulted in a loss of title to the upland.
Well, I mean, my response is this, and one of it is a, it's sort of a physical what happened. I don't know how the island was submerged, and it's as if we want to make it disappear. It's not. The island submerged. The building is still resting on the same piece of earth. The earth is simply submerged, and so it's bottom land. So the title to that piece of earth doesn't change, in my opinion, simply because we talk about avulsion or submersion. I don't see any law to support that theory. I know we quote the general statute about ownership of beds, bays, and so forth, but if you look at what that statute says is in the bridge trust item. It's, you know, it's 28.2 1200. All the beds of the bays, rivers, creeks, and the shores of the sea. And we are somehow now saying that that's not, doesn't characterize the property that this house sat on within the jurisdiction of the Commonwealth, not conveyed by special grant or compact according to law. You have more than enough information to appreciate the fact that there was Crown grants and there were two special grants. I assume that's what special grants are, grants of the governor. We've talked about that. We all agreed that the governor certainly thought they were special. I'm having trouble. I'm not doing a very good job of answering your question directly, and I'm not trying to be obtuse. I just having trouble understanding physically what occurred that changed the nature of the property, and secondly, what the applicable law is that says it's not a bed or bay of the Commonwealth, which would belong to the state, all of us, except unless that property had been conveyed. To me, it's the same property.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Mr. Daniel, I just want to make sure that I understand your client's position. It's that because the upland was granted by special compact or whatever the vehicle was that happened, that it...
I think it was a grant from a Crown.
Okay, Crown grant. Fine. The vehicle is a Crown grant of Ram Island before it submerged, and that because it was granted before it submerged, that it became submerged doesn't change the grant. Is that basically what you're saying? Okay, I just want to make sure I understood. Thank you, sir.
Is there other questions? Ms. Fox?
I just have a comment to Mr. Daniel. This is a commission composed of lay people. We have one lawyer, Mr. Plumley, but he does not serve on the commission in a role of acting as a lawyer. I think we're in the awkward position of we have a stack of paper from you, and we have two memos, opinions, letters, whatever, from the AG's office. And they come to different conclusions, but it would seem to me that it's difficult for us to take any decision that would be contrary to what we've been advised by the AG's office. And so I, for one, would be uncomfortable going forward with, I appreciate the work you've done, and no doubt you had qualified people. Stipulate that, but I think we have to, since we have these two letters, we have to rely on them, and to act contrary to them would not be appropriate.
Well, let me answer in two ways. If you're looking for any response, if you're not, I won't provide one.
I'm not looking for a response.
Okay.
Mr. Beck, did you have a question?
No.
Plumber?
But
position of the rigs is that the house has been there all along, or some structure at that spot, and that is the evidence that is being presented.
Well, the land certainly is what's at issue, and what can be done with the structure sort of falls from that. But the land is the same land that was granted in the direct chain of title from the Crown to the Rod Island Rod and Gunning Club.
And just one follow-up, I'm sorry.
Sure.
There has been no evidence presented about the state of the subject property at the time of the governor's grant in 1914, whether it was submerged or otherwise, that I've seen. Is there anything that you can point out to me?
Oh, no. I think we do have some pictures of what was there in 1914. Or what, does that have a structure on it?
Yes, it shows a structure.
But
go ahead. Sir, to respond.
Let us have your name for the record.
Yeah, for the record, my name is Tom Klein, and I'm a partner with John Daniel at Troutman Sanders. And we have gone back and looked at a number of the deeds going back. You know, obviously, we provided them to you from the mid-1600s. You do see in some of the deeds that we have, 1929, et cetera, references to structures, furniture, and things like that being on it. And I think several of those deeds I have in the packet that I've provided. And then we also have some old photos that would show a structure there. When the governor provided his grant in 1914, and, you know, the statutory provision that John was referring to was that, you know, the waters, you know, that there's an exception if you have a governor's grant or a lawful grant, et cetera. I mean, it does show an island. It doesn't necessarily show a structure at that point. So it may have been sometime between 1914 and by 1929, we definitely have deeds referring to structures and activity taking place there.
Mr. Tankers?
So if I'm – one of the things I was hoping to see from – the title search was the fact that we might find that, in fact, this property or the water or the bottom underneath this house had been granted as submerged land. That has not been the case in the literature that I've seen. Is that, in fact, the case?
Sir, what we found is that the area that constitutes this property was contained within, or at least our experts found, that it was within the overall description of the property out of which this property exists today. In other words, there was a governor's grant, according to our experts, back in the mid-1600s for about a 206-acre tract of land. And over time, and of course at the time, that land was predominantly above the high water mark, but it also referred to it being land, shores, and marshes as well. So there is a reference to marshes way back in that deed from the governor in the mid-1600s. And so what we have is a continuation of deeds, and then you start seeing through the chancellor's suit a little more than 100 years ago, that a stream starts forming along the eastern side of a portion of that property, and slowly within these marshes and within these waters that were part of that larger grant and part of that 60-acre tract emerges what became known as this Ram Island. So, you know, I would answer yes, as part of that original tract, the 206 acres from the original land patent that talked about uplands, that talked about marshes, that talked about shorelines, out of that comes this piece of property. And then the governor, you know, so you really have, in this situation, you have two grants, I think, that would fall under the statute. You have the grant from the governor back in the 1600s, and what George Byrd has done, and that's in the materials that we provided to you. If you look at the tabs, you can go back to that grant from the governor and follow the chain all the way up to these folks over here. And then to the extent there was any ambiguity about that chain, when the chancellor's suit came along about 90 years ago, it went back and looked at the title all over again and made it clear again that this island was part of that larger tract and became separated by virtue of a stream forming. And then you also see in about 1929 definitely references to gunning clubs and structures and others. And, of course, you know, the city of Virginia Beach has taxed this as a separate property for years. It's been zoned as a residential property for years, and of course all the predecessors and interest have paid taxes on this property for a number of years. But I do think that when you look at the statutory provision, too, that was referenced in the Bridge Trust letter, you know, this falls within both of them. I'm trying to get to it. But, you know, it says all the beds, bays, rivers, creeks within the jurisdiction of the Commonwealth not conveyed by special grant or compact, according to law. And you've got a special grant or compact that includes property that this bed would be located in from way back when. And then you also have the other provision talking about, you know, a lawful survey being on the books showing this property. And here, you know, here it is. I mean, this is signed by the governor of Virginia. And is there a lawful survey that goes to it? You know, it's hard to read, but here's a lawful survey for 0.268 acres identified as Ram Island. So
we didn't get that, did we?
I'm sorry?
We didn't get that in this packet, did we?
I think there were references to it in that packet. I don't know if this exact exhibit was included in that packet. I do not believe so, sir.
I could not find a survey in there.
So there is a survey, and I think we'd provided to it previously, sir. But, you know, and this was signed by the governor of Virginia as well. So, you know, with respect to, you know, were there these grants? There certainly were these grants.
Mr. Sessions?
Two questions. One, Mr. Kugelman, what makes this the property of Virginia? What is the AG saying makes this the property of Virginia?
I may even be able to take a step back and answer, I think, another question as well that may be looming before the commission. If I understand the Riggs Council's position, it's that because the upland was conveyed by special grant, that it submerged below mean low water is of no consequence because it was submerged. And that is their position. The Commonwealth's position is, or the Attorney General's office's opinion from the real estate section, is that because that land is now below mean low water, it has reverted to bottom land, which is owned by the Commonwealth, because while Mr. Klein's giving the read that it was conveyed, and therefore, regardless of its character now, it was conveyed, bottom land or not, the Attorney General's office's view of the statute is that the bottom land has to be conveyed by the compact, not just the land.
Now, to take that one step further, I didn't see anywhere in the chain of title where it gave a description of what was conveyed where that house is. I mean, in other words, was it bottom land that was conveyed? Was it marshland? Was it a combination of both? Could it have been?
Sure. If you take the title back to the very first governor's grant in the 1600s, it talked about 206 acres, and it talked about uplands, shorelands, and marsh areas. And from that chain, the ancient title examiners have brought the property all the way to the current. At the time of that grant, it may well have been part of the marshlands. It could have possibly been part of the uplands at that point. But what we do know from the research is that over time, that property kind of separated. The stream came through a portion of it, and the property has, you know, over time devolved into this area.
But we don't know what it looked like when it was originally conveyed.
We don't know. We know it was within that 206 acres, and then there was a sub portion of that was conveyed off that was approximately 60 acres or so. And then, you know, over time, you know, it's moved to looking like this. We do know that, you know, there was a defined area that was a Ram Island, about 2.68 acres as of 1914, when there was the governor's grant that was granting the property to these folks. So there was that would have included some uplands, and it probably would have included some water, you know, some areas between the high water mark and the low water mark at that point.
So we don't know what was eroded, if anything, in and around where the house is.
We don't, I think that we know that the property, that this was part of a much larger tract that would have included the 206 acres. And then I think that from the title work, it shows that that was attached to the land at some point over the course of the last 200 years. And that over time, the area between that and what's now the mainland has eroded, to the condition that we have right now. But I think we feel very confident that all of that area was comprised within that governor's grant. Of several hundred years ago, and certainly that area is included within the King's Grant. Was included in the governor's, in the King's Grant, and also included within the governor's grant.
Any other questions?
Just one further question.
Mr. Tiger.
Right. And I think that, you know, in our title examiners as well, when they looked at this initially, in one of the first letters, you know, they looked at, you know, you look at the statutory provision, and it looks to, okay, you know, the beds, the bays, et cetera, but then it carves out an exception. except where you have a King's grant or a special grant or a patent. And in a situation such as that, then you would have, you know, your ownership. And when you have the fee simple ownership, your fee simple ownership goes down and the fee simple ownership goes up. And so, you know, the fact that perhaps it's now submerged, if you had that governor's grant and if you have that King's grant, that's not going to take away from the title ownership that you would have just because that there may be water over it. And that's why, you know, you have that exemption, you know, in the code, you know, that it carves it out. You know, it says basically the waters would belong to the Commonwealth, except, and there's a big except, and it's except where you have some type of lawful patent or some type of lawful grant. And that's what we've spent all these months establishing, that that lawful patent and those lawful grants do exist in this particular case.
And it includes all types. In other words, the grant includes high ground, marsh,
sure.
Water.
Sure.
Is it,
yeah, I mean, if you look at, you know, one of the tabs in here going all the way back to the King, it talks about this 206 acres, including uplands, including, I think it says banks, and it says including marsh areas. You know, so this could have been a very marshy portion that was included in that governor's grant originally, because we know it would have been out on the fringes of what was always initially that portion of property. So I think it is, you know, we're very comfortable that this property would have been included within that grant. You know, it's not just something, there was a case, Commonwealth versus Morgan, where there was a question of whether a King's grant, you know, governed some 2,000 acres up on Carter's Creek. And what they looked at was, well, okay, would the portion that was part of the dispute in 1979 possibly have been included within that initial grant? There was another case, the Bay House case, which we explain in the materials that we provided, where there was a lawful grant from the governor of what was then a private pond. It had nothing to do with the Commonwealth. That pond then became commingled with waters of the Commonwealth, so you actually had Commonwealth suddenly on top of that. It was a private grant. And so the court said, look, because you have that grant from the governor, even though it's now underneath waters of the Commonwealth, that does not divest you of title. And that was affirmed by the Supreme Court of Virginia. So I think that's the principle that we're looking at here.
But
you know,
that,
and that's why we spent so much time researching it.
But in that case, didn't they have the title to the pond?
In that case, there was, yes.
It was clearly stated in the King's grant?
No, what they received was a governor's grant, but it was a private pond. It was not a pond underneath, you know, that was had waters commingled by the Commonwealth of Virginia. It was just a private piece, so it could have been a wet pond, it could have dried up, but they had that grant. And then when those waters became commingled and you had Commonwealth waters on top of it, then the question became, okay, is that now technically a submerged piece of property that now becomes part of the commons by virtue of that? And they looked at that and they said, no, there was a governor's grant in that case for it, I think in 1909. The governor had the authority to give that grant, and just because it now has waters of the Commonwealth on top of it because of the breach, that does not take away the title to those bottoms. And I think that's very similar to a situation here. You know, we had property that was expressly granted by the King, expressly granted by the governor, and, you know, it may be below the high water mark at this point, but that fact, because of these special grants that are accepted out, you know, by statute, that doesn't take the title away. And
Mr. Tanker.
So two questions. One, to make myself clear. So there was no particular grant of water or land below the low water mark. What one oftentimes sees in here is bottom lands. You only say uplands, shorelands, and marshlands.
I think all
above the mean low water mark.
I think that was the descriptive language. It was generally used for that 206 acres, you know, back in the mid 1600s.
Okay.
And then the grant that came from the governor gave a specific legal description. This was the grant in 1914 that actually gave meets and bounds of a 0.268 triangle of property out in Back Bay. It almost kind of, if I may, kind of, you know, that exhibit kind of shows, you know, an area of about 2.68 and gives that grant from the governor for that property.
Any further questions?
Follow up. So, but that is all property that's above mean low water, the 0.268.
Above mean, I think it's the way it was, yeah. I mean, that would have been in, you know, 1914, probably the way it existed at that time. And, in fact, at the time of the King's grant, you know, I think, you know, we know that this, you know, as you've seen from Mr. Watkinson, this erosion has happened over a period of some time. So, you know, at the time of the King's Grant, this could well have been out in some of the marsh areas.
Mr. Plumlee.
Can you, what was the issue that was previously litigated specifically?
Oh,
in the Court of Chancery. What was that? Was that pertaining? Tell me, just give me a little bit of a reminder of what that pertained to exactly.
Sure, that was on the chain of title. In other words, there had been this chain that came down from the king, and then there were a number of heirs involved, and so there was a question about the continuation of the chain of title, and there were so many different heirs that had an interest in it that it was determined that to continue to pass the chain, that it made the most sense to bring all the parties together, have a chancery suit, identify the title issues, and then make a clear conveyance of the property after that. So what they did in that suit was they adjudicated, you know, a sale, a partition sale of the property. But in the course of doing that, they also looked at what the history of the chain of the title had been. And so in
the year of that was?
That was in 1914, yeah. And that suit clearly identified Ram Island as being part of this larger 60-acre tract, which our experts believe came out, you know, from before. And so what they did with respect to that 60-acre, with respect to Ram Island in that suit, you know, was they made it clear that that was part of this 60-acre tract. And they also talked about how it appeared that historically Ram Island had become separated from the main part of the property. And right. And let me just also say, with respect to the case, again, the statute says, subject to the provisions of 28-1200, the limits or bounds of the tracts of the land lying on the bays, rivers, creeks, and shores within the jurisdiction of the Commonwealth, and the rights and the owners shall extend the mean low water mark, but no further, except where a creek or river, some part thereof, is comprised within the limits of a lawful survey. And that says, for purposes of this section, lawful survey means the boundaries of any land, including submerged lands, held under special grant or compact. And that's precisely what you have here. You have a piece of property that was conveyed under special grant or compact. You have a lawful survey. It even says it needs to be recorded in the circuit court clerk's office. It was recorded in the circuit court clerk's office. And that's what we talk about in the title letter, you know, that was presented originally and that was updated most recently. So, you know, we feel like if you look at the statutory provision about special grants, there was a special grant going back to the king. If you look at this grant from the governor that references a lawful survey, I mean, I think it's as clear as it gets. You know, it says, do you have a lawful survey? The lawful survey marks out this piece of property, and it says, you know, the limits, bounds, of tracts laying on the beds, you know, shall extend to the mean low watermark, but no further except where it's within the limits of a boundary of a lawful survey. And this property that we're talking about here is within the limits of the survey. Now, again, I think probably getting back to the point, and I think that's why we were looking more for just a no permit necessary, because we're not expecting that there's going to be a final adjudication of title here. But we certainly believe that we have rebutted the presumption that there is a King's Grant. We believe that we've rebutted the presumption that there is a Governor's Grant. We believe that we've rebutted the presumption that this falls within the exceptions of the statute that talks about the beds and the bottoms belonging to the Commonwealth, except, and we believe we fall within those exceptions.
Mr. Kugelman?
Thank you. With respect to one point, Mr. Klein, this body doesn't have the jurisdiction to determine ownership. I just want to make sure.
No, I understand. And that's why I was saying, that's why we were thinking that perhaps a no permit necessary is because we can also proceed.
I just went back to a comment that you made earlier. I'm
sure, I understand.
One thing I do want to emphasize to the commission and is that 28.2-1202A does say, shall extend to the mean low water mark, but no further, except where a creek or river or some part thereof is comprised within the limits of the survey. Not just a general description. There's a limitation within the statute itself that limits this to creek or river or some part thereof. And I don't think there's any evidence before the body commission that this is
well,
creek or river.
Actually, or some part thereof.
And if I may respond to that, if you go back to some of the deeds that we provided when it talks about this property separating off, and these are deeds that occurred after that grant from the governor, it does talk about this property being bounded on the side by a stream. In fact, one of them does say Princess Anne County bounded on the northeast by the waters of the bay and on the west by a stream of water or a thoroughfare.
Right, but not the island itself.
Right, it was referred.
The island itself was not a bed or a creek, a bed of a river or a creek at that time.
Right, but the portions of the port. I'm sorry, but the portions of what would have been included within that governor's grant may well have been included in portions of a stream or a creek, because we have old deed references talking about a stream separating it from the mainland as well.
I understand. Thank you.
Plumley.
Yes.
I wondered if there was any evidence that was going to be presented regarding avulsion at all.
Do you have others that are going to speak on this issue? Is there anyone else here today that wishes to speak on the issue of this ownership issue? Okay, seeing none, I think we take that issue up first and see where that takes us, and then depending upon where that takes it up, we look at the after fact permit.
Is this why we make all this money? I agree with Mr. Fox in that when you get opinions from the AG's office, they're not to be taken lightly or set aside or ignored. I agree. I do feel that there's been a significant focus on title for the last 6 months, and I believe that these folks have demonstrated their title. The issue now becomes whether this idea of erosion has created the bottom land that we're looking at, or the submerged property that we're looking at, and therefore it's outside of their ownership and reverted back to the ownership of the Commonwealth. I think there is significant doubt in my mind about the historical facts and what was included in the grant. And with that doubt, I feel more comfortable not going forward in terms of exerting the jurisdiction of this body over this particular structure. I think we're not a courtroom. We've not had sworn witnesses, one after the other, talking about the physical condition at this location. We've got some vague wording in the deeds that probably would need some elicitation through testimony of their exact meaning at the time and place when they were written and the intent at the time that they were drafted and written. I think that's very cloudy. I feel more comfortable for us as a board to say that we're not going to take jurisdiction over this, 2.268 acres or whatever it ends up being where this structure is located. It's been there for a very long time. Some structure has been there for a very long time, improved and kept, maintained. I mean, in the middle of that, it's going to take a lot of maintenance to keep anything there for as long as it's been there. And my preference is that this board not exert its jurisdiction over that particular home.
Yes, just make sure I understand Mr. Plumley's motion.
I'm not making a motion.
I'm sorry. I have not made a motion.
I'm simply discussing the issue.
All right.
I apologize.
Mr. Tanker.
It seems to me that one of the things that we were hoping to see in the title search was this, in fact, grant that the attorneys have talked about in 28.2.1202, which was that the exception where a creek or river or some part thereof is comprised within the limits of a lawful survey. We haven't seen that. I've seen other bottom lands conveyed, and they're specifically noted. This is not specifically noted as being part of the survey. They themselves have said uplands, shorelands, marshlands, no bottomlands. For them, I wish that was the case. This is, we could go around the Tidewater region and see properties that were current King's grants or special grants by the governor that no longer exist, but I don't think our citizens are going to be able to go to those bottom lands and claim them on their own and build some structure there. That effectively is the state's property. But as you say, there's a history here, and I don't think we can disregard the history that the structure represents over top of what I believe is state-owned land. No motion on my part. That's just how I see it. Mr. Fox?
Well, I continue to believe that this body cannot ignore the two memos we've gotten from the AG's office. And if we accept those memos, then we would have jurisdiction, and we would we could then move forward and discuss how we dispose of the JPA. And that's what I would propose doing. This is not a motion, this is a discussion.
Okay.
At some point. Mr. Sessoms.
I agree with Mr. Plumlee. I think, well, I know from experience, that's a very dynamic area down there, and I feel comfortable that ownership has been evidence going back to the King. I know land has come and gone, high ground, low ground, underground, marsh, and everything in between. And I think trying to pigeonhole this into one of those adjectives is going to be very difficult. And I think that I would agree with not taking jurisdiction over this particular 2.75-acre parcel that we have right here. And I'm willing to make that into a motion if we are at that point, or if there needs to be further discussion.
We're ready for a motion anytime.
Well, that would be my motion, that we...
Okay.
Let's hear the motion. Just
not take jurisdiction over this 2.75-acre parcel of property because it has been evidenced that title goes back to a land grant from the King and therefore exempt from our jurisdiction.
Can I ask for one correction? If it's, is it 2 point or is it point two?
I'm not sure.
It's 0.268.
Point two six eight.
I would second that motion.
I just want to clarify something here. Mr. Sessoms' motion includes making a finding that the commission does not have jurisdiction, or is it just simply the motion that the commission is not making a finding as to jurisdiction and is declining to exercise it if it does?
That. Declining to
the latter?
The latter, yes.
Okay, so let's, Mr. Kugelman, you want to help Mr. Sessoms with the modified motion?
Sure. I just want to make sure.
So we're declining to take jurisdiction over the 0.265-acre parcel of land.
Okay, without making a determination as to whether the commission has jurisdiction.
That is correct.
That's so seconded.
The motion is to we're declining to take jurisdiction, but making no
finding
as to whether we have jurisdiction.
Correct, sir.
Okay. Everyone understands that motion. Comments on the motion?
Where does that leave us with the permitting and the...
If this motion were to pass, that would end the matter before us. There would be no discussion of the after-the-fact permit.
Okay. I was concerned about that second story. So that would be forgotten and be left alone.
Yes.
Okay.
If the motion passes, any further comments on the motion? All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Let's see a show of hands. One, two, three. Opposed?
Nay.
One, two, three. The chair is going to vote no. The motion fails. Like Mr. Fox, I'm convinced that the AG has it correct, and I can't get past those arguments. So that motion fails. Is there another motion?
Do we have to have a motion to move forward and accept the AG's memos and move forward with
them? Helpful.
All right. Well, I will move that we accept the memos that we've received from the AG's office and move forward with consideration of the JPA.
All right. Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Second by Ms. Haney. Comments on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
No.
Let's see a show of hands on that. All those in favor of the motion, raise your hand. 1, 2, 3. Opposed, like sign. 1, 2, 3. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Which brings us to the after-the-fact permit.
Did that, just for clarification, what did the second motion do?
The second motion essentially exerted jurisdiction based on the advice.
My question is, for the purposes of administrative record, was the motion such that the record is the opinion of the Attorney General? Is that what you're saying? What about all the other material?
It is saying what I intended to say was this commission does not have, faced with the Attorney General's memos, we do not have the position of reversing that.
Thank you. All right,
now we're on to the after the fact.
What do you want
to
hear about now? I'm not going to have much. First, let me say I very much appreciate you all's attention on that. It's very difficult, I understand, and I do appreciate your position as lay people in a difficult spot that we may have put you in, but it was and is necessary to have that discussion. So thank you for that very much. I'll say a couple of comments about the after the fact. Obviously, this is somewhat predictable. We would agree in part and pretty strongly disagree in part with respect to the staff recommendation. Let me mention a couple of things that were addressed in the staff report, if I could. I want to try to get this power line issue out of the way, because I don't know what's going to happen with that. It keeps coming back, and seems to me to keep coming back in new and improved forms. We did what this commission asked us to do with respect to the power line and raising them. The current height now is 14 feet. There was some reference about the Corps of Engineers wanting 20 feet. Bear with me for 1 minute. The original, after the June meeting of the commission, the original or some follow-up correspondence from the staff was that when we provided the updated photographs that we'd taken care of the poles, was that they hoped that we'd determine the elevation to be satisfactory to, and I'll quote from the letter, Dominion or the Coast Guard. We made them satisfactory to Dominion, and Kevin Riggs worked closely with Dominion to raise that. There was then a reference in the staff report, I think it's the second page, bottom of the first full paragraph, that says, we've recently received correspondence from the Corps of Engineers indicating that they want the line raised to 20 feet above mean sea level. That's nearly not what the Corps said. What the Corps' letter said was, we would like to see the lines raised to 20 feet. And then, if I could, Mr. Chairman, a subsequent email from the Corps of Engineers, if I could provide it, indicates that they're perfectly happy with 14 feet. So I hope that any issues with respect to the power lines will be that we can say the power lines are appropriately raised, the lines are not sinking, the placards have been placed, and 14 feet is an adequate height for those based on what we were told here, what Dominion has said, and what the Corps of Engineers has now said. I'm not going to talk a lot about the issue of what's water dependent or what's not water dependent. You all know that the guidelines are, at best, somewhat loose. While they give a definition of what is water dependent, it is oftentimes observed in the breach. This commission has done it on multiple occasions in some pretty significant circumstances where third floors, gazebos, and other things have been added to structures without benefit of permit and somehow have found their way to determine this to be those things to be water dependence for purposes of permitting. So I'm going to ask you, our sort of disagreement with the staff report has to do with the second floor, and I'm going to ask you to include that as we have asked for it in the after the fact permit consideration. I don't know that this has a great deal to do with anything, but given the long history of this, it just boggles me sometimes when I read these staff reports. And part of the rationale for the non-second floor has to do with the absence of any engineering studies with respect to its weight, but somehow it's going to fall into the water. It has nothing to do with anything. Nobody has any studies about whether it's going to fall in the water. Somebody eyeballed it and said, well, that might fall in the water. I mean, why is that a basis for a recommendation that this second story not be included? I mean, nobody has any information with respect to that. But what you do know is that when you go forward, and when the rigs now have to go forward and go do this battle, if you will, with the city of Virginia Beach, they're going to look at the construction and the engineering drawings, and that's where they'll decide whether or not it's going to fall in the water or not. And they'll make appropriate recommendations with respect to the appropriate engineering specifications that should be utilized to make sure the second floor doesn't fall into the water. Now we've got we've now injected a third opinion with respect to the power lines, which is the Coast Guard, but I've addressed that and I'm not going to talk about that anymore. At this point, I think I will reserve comment with respect to the issue of imposition of civil charges. And I think you have some protestants here. We can hear from them, and if I could have a couple of 3 minutes following that, I'd be grateful.
You will get that. Are there others here who wish to speak for or against the after-the-fact application? Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you will give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Please state your name.
My name is Dottie Carlson, and I'm here to oppose the after-the-fact permits. The reason being that this has been going on for a really long time, and they've been offered several different times to do the after-the-fact permits, and they chose not to go that route. This has been pretty expensive on your part, as well as, I'm sure, their part. They've chose to disregard the agency's recommendations to stop work. They've disregarded the City of Virginia Beach no occupancy law. This goes on and on and on. And the second story, from what I read, it's over public water. It doesn't benefit the public. And it either needs to come down, or if it's going to remain there, then I feel like the rig should be penalized and some type of fine for proceeding without getting permits and then trying to at least work with the agency to get this straightened out. A part of the length of this is because of the uncooperative ways that they, and I got all this information from listening to y'all's meetings, I just don't agree with it, and I don't think they should have it.
Thank you. Any questions from Ms. Yes, Mr. Plummer?
Where do you live in it? Are you near the structure? Do you live near this?
I own a home in Hunt Club Forest in Virginia Beach. It's at London Bridge Road. I don't know. That might be 5 or 6 miles.
Oh. So you're not an adjacent property owner? Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Carlson. Anyone else? Seeing none, Ms. Daniels, back to you for wrap up.
Wrap it up. Thank you, Mr. Plumley. Really asked a telling question. These are not adjacent folks who have made this protest. They have a long history with respect to this issue. I would quibble just because we are on the record with the term and label as being uncooperative. I just stood here and went through 30 minutes of cooperation with this commission. We weren't combatants in that. We were simply trying to get to an answer that was best on both for you all and on the citizens of the Commonwealth. But we have not been uncooperative, and I think, frankly, have been most cooperative. I simply would say, on respect to the issue of civil charges, I understand that perhaps that might be the norm. This matter has been anything but the norm. We have, as part of that cooperation with the staff and the commission, spent a lot of time with respect to the issue of title, and not because we were the only ones in the room talking about title. It was, and I realize you can't move money from pot A to pot B, but the fact remains that significant expenditures have been made by the Riggs family. They certainly feel, and they're going to walk away from here no matter what you all do, they're going to feel like they've been penalized, because as we talked about, their issue is one of principle, but you all have heard that matter is behind us. But they're going to feel certainly penalized, and they have been both from a quality of life perspective and from a pecuniary perspective paid a price. And I would just ask that in your discussions and your contemplations of the appropriate thing to do here, that you seriously consider the importance of the second story for inclusion in any after-the-fact permits you may or may not deem to issue, that you conclude the issue of the power line poles, and that you think long and hard on the addition of any pecuniary penalty with respect to the Riggs family. So with that, Mr. Commissioner, I'm going to sit down and let you all have your discussion. And
thank you. That is now before the commission. Mr. Fox?
I just have a question.
Okay.
Perhaps
before he leaves?
Perhaps for you.
Oh, okay.
Regarding the power, the height of the power line, we have a memo from the Corps of Engineers saying that 14 feet is okay, but staff has asked for 20 feet because they were under the impression that it was the Corps of Engineers' request. Can we move forward and ignore that issue now that it seems to be disposed of, or are we required to hang to the 20?
I don't think you're required to hang to the 20 at all. But I think you ought to mention it. Any motion that comes out of this body, I think, ought to clarify where we are if it's different than. Just to settle it.
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, I don't think the staff asked for 20 feet. I think they represented that the
Corps. Right, correct. Correct.
The Corps was asking for 20 feet.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
Is that what you wanted to mention?
The Corps really never asked for 20
right.
feet. They just said. That might be better
right.
than 14. But.
Yeah.
Good clarification. Any other discussion?
Well, my question, Mr. Commissioner, is whether we want to have any discussion on whether, even having found as a body that there's jurisdiction, that we not want to take any action at this location, based in part upon the history of the structure being there for such a long period of time. There is a theory in the law of adverse possession after a while. I don't know how long these properties have been submerged. I don't know how long the structure has been there. But it seems to be an awfully long time, and these people have taken possession. They've acted as though it's their own. The city's treated it like it's theirs. And it seems as though we can, as a body, say, well, we're not giving up the bottom lands. We're asserting our jurisdiction, but we're not going to be actively permitting this. They can go to the city and get what permits they need, do that sort of business. But from just because of the unique character of this, and after the fact brings on all of the discussion of penalties, civil charges, all of those things, which I'm not necessarily saying we can't waive if we feel it's appropriate to waive, but we may avoid that discussion by simply saying we're not going to act with regards to this. I don't know if there's any appetite for that on the board. I know I see your face, but I'm looking to others as well, and just wanted to know if that's something that people would entertain.
Anybody want to comment on that?
Go ahead, Ed.
It would seem to me, as you mentioned, that this property has a history, and I think Mr. Daniels makes a good case that these folks have had some pecuniary ramifications of how this has played out before us. I could see making a motion that would say give them an after-the-fact permit, including the power line, with no civil charge. I think this has been murky enough that to consider a civil charge, it would be as though they stumbled in a dark room and we're going to penalize them for that. And I don't think we can penalize. I don't think we should penalize them for that.
Question for Mr. Tankard.
Yes, sir.
Do you have an opinion on the second story?
I think my opinion is that they proceeded with the second story in a fashion like many of us would if we had a house. They built onto it because they thought they owned it. And legal advice may have been, hey, you really do own all this. So in some ways, they've been in a catch-22 where the folks they've hired have told them, hey, look, you do have right here. We've come and said, no, that's not correct. So I think they've acted in their own best interest that I don't think have any detriment to the state. So I will allow them to have that second floor.
Mr. Beck?
Yeah, would that mean then that this is fine with me too, but what about the, would they be required to meet codes and compliances of Virginia Beach, current?
I think that's definitely the case. I mean, it's going to be up to
yes, sir.
Virginia Beach, but
okay.
You would presume that to be the case. Any other comments? Is there a motion?
Ed's going to make his motion.
I'll make that motion. I'll make a motion to approve this after-the-fact permit, with which would include the electrical poles at a height of 14, or line a height of 14 above mean high water, and that there also would be no civil charge with regard to this after-the-fact approval.
Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Plumley. Any discussion or questions on the motion?
Does that includes the second story?
Yep.
Yes.
That's right.
Seeing no discussion, it does include the second story. Ready to vote? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you.